Fatherless Fanny by Anonymous. Chapter 23. Pemberton Abbey. During the silent ride that ensued, Fanny's ideas were occupied by the most painful reflections, the most anxious uncertainty. Colonel Ross had spoken as if he were certain that he knew the person whose appearance for 2 nights had excited her curiosity so greatly. The figure had seemed, to her eye, to resemble that of Mr. Hamilton, but it was impossible for her to ascertain if it were really him or not, as his face had never been revealed to her view. He had promised to see her at Pemberton Abbey, in the letter she had received from him just before she left London. But there appeared no probability that he could have followed her steps with such exactitude upon the road as to rest every night in the same spot, and without being observed during the day. Nor did there appear any reasonable motive for his lurking about the precincts of the inn at the dead hour of the night, without knowing that she would be at her chamber window, if it were really her he wanted to speak to. The field of conjecture is boundless, and Fanny's imagination wandered in it until it was weary. Nor could it draw a single conclusion from its researches to rest upon after the fatiguing exertion. Towards the close of the day, the turrets of Pemberton Abbey struck the eyes of the travellers as they ascended a steep hill, from the summit of which they beheld the rich valley in which that venerable edifice was situate. An exclamation of pleasure burst involuntarily from the lips of Fanny, as she recognized the spot where she had passed so many happy days with her beloved Lady Ellancourt, whilst her heightened color and sparkling eyes betrayed the emotions of her heart. "You are a happy girl, Fanny," said Lady Maria, smiling. "Your romantic admiration of beautiful scenery seems to give you real delight."
"It is not mere admiration that excites my pleasure now," replied Fanny. "The recollection of dear friends has its share in the sweet sensation. The sight of Pemberton Abbey brings the happiest moments of my life to my remembrance, and I can scarcely persuade myself that the dear lady I long to embrace will not be there to receive me. Oh, if she were, what happiness should be mine!"
"The scheme of happiness would be incomplete," said Colonel Ross with a sneer, "unless the dear lord were there as well as the dear lady."
"Most true," answered Fanny. "Lord Ellancourt is almost as dear to my heart as his amiable mother. I am not sure whether he is not quite as dear. The debt of gratitude to his lordship has the claim of priority, but for his goodness I should never have known that revered lady."
"You must take care now," said Colonel Ross, "how you make such unequivocal confessions of loving his lordship. Young Lady Ellancourt may not like it, perhaps, so well as the dowager did."
"The love I bear Lord Ellancourt," replied Fanny, blushing, "can never give offense to anybody, and I am sure, least of all to the sweet lady you allude to."
"I am glad to hear it is of such a nature," replied Colonel Ross sarcastically. "I merely spoke with the wish of cautioning you against professions of regard that might give rise to jealousy, should Lady Ellancourt be one of those narrow-minded women who wish to keep their husbands to themselves."
"Did everyone consider the marriage vow in the same sacred light that I do," replied Fanny, "there would need no caution against an infringement of its rights." As she spoke, her cheeks glowed with indignation, and she cast a look of disdain at Colonel Ross that cut him to the soul. Yet, although it awakened remorse in his depraved mind,
It did not stimulate repentance, but rather served to inflame that desire of revenge which was already kindled in his bosom. Lady Maria seemed lost in astonishment as she listened in silence to the dispute between her husband and Fanny. The asperity which was evident in the words of both surprised her beyond measure. The kindness with which the Colonel had hitherto treated Fanny, making the change as wonderful on his side as Fanny's native mildness did on hers. Some secret motive must actuate both, but what it could possibly be remained impervious to the shallow capacity of the good-natured Lady Maria. At length, the arrival of the carriage at Pemberton Abbey put a stop to conjecture and resentment, and the bustle of establishing themselves in their different apartments procured amusement for all the travelers. Fanny's mind could now admit but one subject. It was wholly absorbed in reflections on her absent friends, whose images, ever present in her grateful heart, were now more particularly brought before her eyes by the thousand local circumstances calculated to recall the pleasing remembrance on the spot where their kindness, so often repeated, had endeared them to her. The bedroom allotted for Fanny's use was the one she had occupied when Lady Ellencourt was there, and as her ladyship's room was not chosen by Lady Maria, the whole suite of apartments were at Fanny's command, whose greatest pleasure now consisted in wandering through the forsaken chambers, gazing alternately on a picture of Lord Ellencourt that was over the chimney in the dressing-room, and another of his amiable mother, which hung in the adjoining bedroom. It seemed, as she contemplated the senseless canvas, as if the features so admirably portrayed upon its surface sympathized in the sufferings she complained of. Lady Ellencourt wore the expression of the tenderest pity, whilst those of her son appeared animated by the glow of spirited resentment. "Dear shades of my distant protectors," exclaimed Fanny, apostrophizing the portrait she was looking at, "why can ye not now assist the forlorn object of your solicitude? Why am I doomed to suffer the tyranny of oppression, even in the very house where my infant heart first learnt the pleasing lessons of gratitude and affection? But why do I call myself forlorn? Am I not under the immediate protection of heaven? Can any power, however mighty, prevail against the arm of omnipotence? To that benign guardianship I commend myself, whose watchful eye will not suffer confiding innocence to trust in vain." With such thoughts as these did the artless Fanny endeavor to soothe her perturbed mind, and by placing a confidence in heaven, she soon found her terrors subside, and that peace which the world can neither give nor take away became the inmate of her heart. End of chapter 23.